Welcome back again to Man Was Not Born to Cry series. This week we are on chapter 3, The Truth That Makes Free. And I tell you, I could use some of that truth this morning, or now it's this afternoon. I had to start and stop this talk 4 different times on my desktop computer. And the reason was, the power has been going on and off. This was just the 5th time a second ago. And of course, if you haven't saved what you've done on a computer, you know as well as I do, it disappears. And so I just gave up and decided, well, this week we weren't going to have a talk. But then as I took the dog out for a walk, I suddenly remembered my laptop. You see, the laptop has a built-in battery. And so now, if the power goes out, like it just did, for a couple of seconds, I don't lose this talk because the battery kicks in. And since the power is only out for a few seconds, enough to frustrate you, it kicks right back in, and so the battery can see us through. So it turns out we have a backup power, which will see us through. Now, let's take a moment. I need a moment of silence in which to be receptive. And then we'll start on this chapter 3. Now, if you have become still inside, receptive, listening, bearing witness to the activity of God, then we can enter into the principles put forth in this chapter. Now, this chapter is similar to the talk from the 1955 Kailua study series called The Secret of the Healing Principle, which was chapter 8 in those transcripts. This talk, he said, he gave only once every 2 years, 4 times in 8 years. Yet, he also says he considers this talk the most important. Obviously, this is going to be a chapter discussing or revealing the nature of error. The nature of error is something that he said repeatedly students did not like to hear about. They preferred to sit on cloud 9. However, sitting on cloud 9, which is what I call just walking around saying, God is all, God is all, God is all, doing that while at the same time suffering from physical problems or lack and limitation, well, it gets old pretty fast. Well, or at least it gets old. I'm not sure if it's pretty fast since some of us do it for years. But, he says, if you get the principles in this chapter, you can do away with all those spiritual talks and just keep this one. So important is it to understand the nature of error you can eliminate everything else. Now that's right from his own mouth. You can get rid of all the other books and all the other talks and just listen to that one from the Kaluuya study series and study this chapter here. Now that's what he says, and I believe him. Yet, he also says he only gives it, or he only gave it, 4 times in 8 years. Now, he traveled. I won't be able to get all this right because there's just so many places. But he traveled all over the United States, Hawaii, Canada, South Africa, England, Australia, New Zealand. I think he went to Germany, Sweden. Oh, just all over the world. And every year he gave lots, and, well, let's say dozens and dozens of talks. Because he would go give a weekend seminar somewhere, and there would be, well, at least 8 to 10 talks. Sometimes he'd stay in one location for a week or two. And in the Kaluuya study series, there was twenty talks? Side A and B, so that would be 40 talks, actually. 20 tapes, 40 talks. And yet he only gave one. And he only gave that one every, on the nature of error, every 2 years. Now, if this is so important, why, I ask myself, or I ask God, why did he only give this 4 times in 8 years? This is the most important talk, according to Joel, and yet only once every 2 years. All around the world, and yet only once. Not this year, but next. And not the one after, but next. Why? The answer is, again, according to him, because you cannot give meat unto the babes. Because there has to be a preparation for this talk, for this chapter. And that preparation, he says in the Kaluuya studies, for most of us takes many years. And so that's where he starts this chapter, talking about truth was hidden from the masses. Moses only taught, you might put it this way, Moses only gave this truth, the truth that makes free, to the high priests, because he felt only they were prepared to receive it. Otherwise, it just became more intellectual fodder and something to discuss and think about and maybe contemplate, but it couldn't be received in the depths of our soul. I remember we started this book talking about the soul realm, and this truth has to sink down into the soul of us. So Moses, he says, only gave it to the high priests, and for years and years it was hidden and existed only in the hidden esoteric schools. Jesus comes along and decides everyone should have it, and he teaches wherever there are people to listen, wherever two or more were gathered, he would teach. If they asked, he would teach, and sometimes even if they didn't ask. Yet it so upset, the truth that he revealed so upset the political process and the politicians and religious leaders, which were also politicians, it so upset them that this truth so upset them that they crucified him. Now, after he ascended, as you know, the disciples began to teach. But they felt, for the most part, that this truth should be given only to the Hebrews. Only they were prepared because of their religious training. Of course, that wasn't true, but that's how they felt, and so that's what they did. But then here comes Paul, and he has such a tremendous experience, such a spiritual awakening, that it's revealed to him this truth should be given to everyone, to all. And he begins doing just that. But Peter's not convinced until he has an inner vision, a dream which shows him about that cloth being let down over the four corners of the earth and covering everything. Then he says, ah, okay, it must be true that this can be given to everyone. Right? So, this is where Joel starts this chapter. And Jesus gave it to everyone, and Paul and Peter gave it to everyone. But Joel did not. Joel gave this talk to everyone that was ready. He gave it only once every 2 years, only four times in 8 years. And he says in this chapter, it's his feeling that he should give meat to those who are prepared and milk to the newcomers. So I guess all of that is to tell you that if you come to this chapter to learn something with your mind, you are not ready for this chapter. But if you come to this chapter to let this truth sink down within and work with this truth, then you are ready to have that experience that makes men free. So he says in this chapter, today we have been given perhaps the most unusual opportunity that has ever been given to the world in any age. The priceless opportunity to work through the mind to the spirit. In other words, to work out of the letter, come out of the letter and into the spirit. Thereby going from an intellectual understanding of truth to its spiritual discernment. And so if you would be made free, you must find how to move from the mind to the spirit, from an intellectual understanding to spiritual discernment. Now, those aren't just words, my friends. You're going to have to find a way to set the intellect aside, which is why we had our quiet time, so that spiritual discernment within you can reveal to you the principles in this chapter. All right, so with that as an introduction, we can get underway. He says, knowing that God is all does not stop the process or the progress of sin, disease, death, lack, and limitation. Knowing that God is closer than breathing does not do it. Nor does knowing that God is omnipotence and omnipresence do it. I was just talking with someone yesterday, a couple of someones, who are very nice people, wonderful people. In fact, I love them. These people are faithful church attenders. They support their church, they work in their church, they do good works. And I was listening to them talk to each other. And they were saying how God is omnipotence. God is everywhere present, omnipresent. I heard them. Yet, these people have some problems of sin, disease, death, lack, and limitation. Remember, we're not blaming anyone. We're just observing. And I'm observing that he is right here. When he says, oh, you can walk around knowing God is all. God is all. God is omnipresent. You can even repeat it to yourself. You can even say it in your contemplation and have a little peaceful feeling. But look at these words in black and white here. Knowing that God is closer than breathing, that God is all, will not stop the process or progress of sin, disease, death, lack, and limitation. It does not do it. Nor does knowing that God is omnipotence or omnipresence do it. What then is necessary? Now I know all of us, me and you, anyone else hearing this, we have not proved these principles to their fullness. We quote and we talk God and we sound spiritual in our writings, but there's still lack of limitation. There's still a little disease or a little problem. We're missing something. Now, this is very important. Please don't miss this. You may have missed this for years, but this chapter is going to tell you what you're missing and what you need to do. That is, if you want the truth that makes you free. If the truth of God as omnipresence, omnipotence, and omniscience could be realized, not mentally stated or agreed with, but realized, that is all that would be necessary for the establishment of harmony in our being. But it is so rare that an individual ever attains the realization that God is all to any demonstrable degree, that is, to any degree that appears as form. It is so rare that anybody is able to do this that you would probably have difficulty remembering the names of three persons since the time of Christ Jesus who have done it, who have attained it. Yet, it is true that the realization of God is as all is sufficient for our every need. Now, do you hear what he's saying? He's going to say it in his words. I'm going to say it here in mine. I've said it before, but many of you have not believed me. I can tell. I can tell by what you write me. I can tell by what you say you're practicing. You just flat don't believe me. But I'm going to say it again. If you realize that God is all, if you walk around saying, God is all, God is good, God is omnipresent, if you contemplate that and work yourself into a good emotional feeling about it, even if you say God is all and you have a feeling of the presence, that's not enough. Something is missing. You can still suffer from, well, the progress of sin, disease, death, lack, and limitation. That's not a complete realization. And he tells you, also in the Kai Lua study series, that there's two parts. And if you leave out half of it, you will not have the demonstrations to which you're entitled. Now, he's very specific on this. Yet, we have people saying, I know I shouldn't be harping on this, but it just bothers me that people say, well, you don't have to do anything except know that I am that I am. I am that I am, I am that I am, I am that I am. Okay. Right, I understand your point of view, but it's not my viewpoint. That's not enough, according to Joel, to bring the full, complete principle, to practice the complete principle, to spiritually discern the complete principle, will bring complete demonstration, within and without. So what is that complete principle? Well, the first part is let's see, he puts it that way over here, if I can find it. The first part of the principle is to know, well, that God is closer than breathing, that God is omnipotent, omnipresent, and omniscient. That's the first part. But that's not all. There's a second part. And the second part is what he's going to get into here. Let's read it in his words. Inasmuch as this truth of the allness of God has not been realized to a great enough degree by enough people, there must be something to be learned in addition to this. Some principle or law, some way that will make it possible for us to realize God's allness and thereby overcome sin, disease, death, lack, and limitation within ourselves and within those who turn to us. And so what is that other principle or law, the other half that must be realized to make a complete demonstration? The impersonal origin of evil. Well, in other words, impersonalization and nothingization. That completes the picture. Now, he said this for years, and we go around it. We go past it. We don't want to look at it. We don't want to apply it because it certainly involves work. And he even says years of work in order to come to that place where it's second nature. Well, we don't want to do that. We want to skip over that and just enjoy the beautiful parts of God. So, well, we're allowed to do that. You can do that. Forget about it. Just enjoy the beautiful parts of God. But know that you will not be able to stop the progress of sin, disease, death, lack, and limitation. You may say, oh, today I feel my oneness with God so well. And I'll get back to you. I'm on my way for a series of tests to determine what's wrong with my body. Or I'm on my way to file for bankruptcy. So that's not a complete demonstration. A complete demonstration is harmony, peace, joy, and fulfillment out here, reflecting the complete realization of God's allness. Now, look, you cannot realize God's allness without, in addition, also realizing the nature of error. Why? Because if you don't realize the nothingness, the impersonal nature of error, and the nothingness, the non-power of error, you're not really realizing that God is all. You have God and, well, this little problem over here. It's not too bad. It doesn't bother me too much. I can overlook that. Doesn't everybody have problems? Sure. Well, doesn't everybody have two problems? Well, yeah. Well, everybody has some problems. I have 2 to 8, right? Sure. But then a major problem comes along and we say, oh, goodness, I missed something. Or we just cry out for help and have others work for us. Look, do you want this freedom, the truth that makes free? You've got to buy the whole package. And so you will never have the full, complete realization of omnipresence and omnipotence unless you complete the principle by knowing the nature of error. So he's going to explain the second part of the principle. The first part is God is individual being, and that being is perfect. Right? The allness of God. The second part of the principle is two parts. The impersonal origin of evil and the nothingness of evil. So, one of the most important of the principles revealed to me, says Joel, was the impersonal cause and nature of evil. All evil, regardless of its name or nature, is impersonal. That means it's not your wrong thinking that has caused your trouble, not your envy, jealousy, or malice, or your sensuality, or your lack of gratitude, or your anything. Not a single thing in you is responsible for any of your ills. Evil has its origin in something that for the moment we may call the carnal mind. Now, we've said before that the name you give it is not important, and he's going to say that too. Evil has its origin in something that for the moment we may call the carnal mind. If the term carnal mind means nothing to you, you can call it Satan. How about that? When you think that's kind of peculiar, if you met an infinite way person and they were saying, well, Satan's appearing as this and Satan's doing that, and Saints, and yet, he says that's perfectly fine. You're allowed to do that. If that term works for you, and you recognize that term as impersonal, you're perfectly free to say, God is all, but Satan appears as these problems. Satan appears as this lack and limitation and disease. This is Satan. Now, I'm not comfortable with that because that brings up so much religious background. However, I can see it. I can see it. But he says, if these terms do not appeal to you, call it appearance. Call it a claim. A claim's nice. I like that. Because it's a claim of a presence or a substance or a power or a being other than God. You can call it illusion. You can call it hypnotism. You can call it mesmerism. You can call it mortal mind. You can call it mental images. You can call it a dream. You can call it Adam's dream. The name you give it is unimportant. The important thing is to know that evil, of whatever name or nature, stems from a universal, impersonal source. Ah, but that's only half of the second part of the principle. You might say there's four parts. And you have to know all four parts. God is all, yes, but God is individualized as man or manifestation. And so God is individual being. Those are the first two parts. And the third part is evil, error, is impersonal. It doesn't have an owner. It doesn't have a creator. It doesn't have a person. It doesn't have an anything except an image, but it's a substanceless image. And let's get something else straight. God did not create evil. God did not create images. God did not create universal belief. God did not create the belief in two powers. God did not create Maya. I know in some of the religions, it's believed that God is using illusion to teach us a lesson. But that just isn't so. It just isn't so. And so, because there's no God in the impersonal error that's appearing, then there's no power in it. There's no cause in it. There's no law in it. And that's the fourth part. But getting back to this impersonal nature, which is very important, all evil stems from the belief in two powers. It's impersonal. That's the first half of the second part. When you have reached this point and are able to see this, half your battle is won, but only half. The next step is even harder. And that is when we realize that the carnal mind is the arm of flesh, or nothingness. The carnal mind is a belief in two powers, or nothingness. Because it has no God power, no God law, no God substance. It wasn't made by God. Right? Alright, so we have the first part, which is God is all, and God is individual being. But that's not enough. You will not demonstrate that, no matter how well you know that. Because you don't really know it, if you still have error and God. You may say to yourself, God is all, but if you're walking in error, you don't really see it yet. You want to see it, you want to believe it, you want to know it, but you're still experiencing God and. And the reason is because you haven't done the other half of the principle. And so the first part of the other half is to know that error is impersonal. You might say it's just floating out there. All the erroneous beliefs that anyone ever had are floating out there. And they can manifest through you. And will. Until you get the other half of this realization. And the way to get the other half of the realization, which is that carnal mind is not a power, or mental images are not power, or Satan is not a power, world belief is not a power, well, you're going to have to come to a place where you actually know, realize, perceive, and feel, not think or memorize, but feel the nothingness of carnal mind, of world thought, of universal belief. To the degree, he says, that you accept the belief in two powers, good and evil, in that degree are you the victim. You're not a victim of two powers, because there aren't any two powers. You're a victim of the belief in two powers. You see, the carnal mind is not our enemy. It came to me in meditation. The carnal mind is not our enemy. The belief the carnal mind has power is the enemy. And so now how do you overcome that belief? You can try to hypnotize yourself into overcoming that belief, but that won't work. You'll still be suffering from your particular problem. You still won't be able to help those that come to you. Well, how are you going to overcome? What have we established here so far? God is all. God is individual being. Hopefully, you're having experiences with that principle. However, you'll never make the complete demonstration until you get the second half, which is to know error is impersonal and has no power. When you really know error is impersonal and has no power, then your realization, hey, God really is all. This really is nothing. I've been repeating this to myself over and over for years. But wow, like on the road to Damascus, your eyes will be opened. You'll be blinded to the error, which has no existence. Only now, it will be a deep, deep realization. Then, you'll be able to know, ah, God really is all. God really is all. I've repeated that all those years, but I didn't really know it. Now I have the full and complete realization because I know that error is impersonal and has no God power. So, since it's nothingness, God really is all. I see. My eyes were blind and now I really see. And with that realization, you'll have the complete demonstration which makes you free. Out here, as well as in here. Then you'll have the complete demonstration. So, it's vitally important that we find out, well, how do I come to this inner depth of realization that impersonal error has no power? Well, I hate to tell you this, but there's no shortcut. Nobody can take out their magic wand and tap you on the lightly on top of the head and anoint you and give you the realization that error is not power. There's only one way to do it, and that's to work with these principles and work with these principles and work with these principles and begin to witness in your meditation, as you come to that place where it clicks, it's impersonal and really has no power. God really is all. And each time you come to that realization, you witness a healing out here, a real healing. The disease is gone. The lack is gone. The limitation is gone. And harmony is flowing, forming, being your experience. That's how you come to the realization that it has no power. And he says nobody can do that for you. It may take you years, but isn't it worth it to finally have the truth that makes you free? Because if you when you have it for eternity. And if you don't have it, you're going to come back again and practice this again until you do have it. Oh, you may not ever hear of the infinite way. You may be on a totally different path. But if you are going to realize the truth that makes you free, I guarantee you're going to incorporate all four of these principles, all two parts to this complete demonstration. If you go down the middle path of Buddha, you will learn not to judge. And you will learn that Maya has no power, that there's only the one infinite self. You'll have self-realization, which will be complete when you learn that Maya has no power. So, one way or another, every knee will bend. You can do it now. You can start now. Or you can take up your cross and follow and get it done in this life. So, he says, always remember, it's more important to know and understand the nature of error than it is to repeat like a parrot that God is all. So, you see, he's run into the same kind of people. They smile, oh, hello, your talk is so beautiful. God is all. And you can look at them and know they don't have the depth of awareness. You can feel it. All right, so there's a handful. He says very few, but I believe there's a handful right here who are ready to grasp the entire principles which will bring the complete demonstration. So he says, God did not create two powers. God never created a belief in two powers. And you know, there are people that I hear saying, well, I'm going through this because God is teaching me a lesson. Oh, that just bothers me so much. A God of perfect love. Think about this. Now look at this. God is love, an infinite ocean of love. How could an infinite ocean of love want to put someone through some pain and agony to teach them a lesson? It's got to be utter nonsense. Now look at this. God is individual being. God is your being. God is my being. God is all being. Then who does God have to test? Since God is the only being, is God going to test God? Why, it's utterly ridiculous. Totally a fabrication of religion or that mind which wants to keep you in control. God is all. There's no one for God to test. There's no lessons for God to give you. But there is the need to awaken to that allness. If you're not conscious of your left hand, you'll never use it. If you're not conscious of your infinite being and the nothingness of impersonal error, you'll never demonstrate the perfect, complete demonstration. But if you are conscious of it, it will manifest. It will demonstrate. And it's as automatic as sunbeams coming when the sun shines in the morning. It's automatic. So, let us not blame God. Remember, we're supposed to take the responsibility from God. Release God, he says in Realization of Oneness. There's a whole chapter devoted to it. Release God from all this nonsense. All that is required, he says, to be free of the belief in two powers is to know the truth. And the truth to know is that what God did not create was not made. It was never empowered. Since the belief in good and evil is not God-made, it is not God-ordained or God-sustained. It has no law of God to perpetuate it. And so the first step in our healing work is to impersonalize the evil, remove it from the person. Then, he says, take the second step of declaring that this carnal mind is a belief without God, without law, without presence, without power to sustain it. When you have done that, you have accomplished 75 to 80% of your healing work. You see, the spirit, the presence, is not in the belief in two powers. God is not using the illusion at any time. The illusion isn't a big, gigantic thing that's clamping down on you. The illusion was supposed to be a term that means nothingness. You remember the example he gives of the person who steps on a rope in the shower and visualizes in his mind a snake, is terrified, petrified, jumping out of the shower faster than the speed of light? Where is the snake? Where is the snake? You can't say in his mind. There's no snake in his mind. There's a picture. But is it a snake? Does it have substance? No. It's a belief. It's a momentary flash of a neurosnap making a picture. But it is nothingness. And so, Maya, illusion, mental images, carnal mind, world belief, there's no God in it. God's not using it. God's not teaching you a lesson with it. God's not supplying it with power. Because there is no snake. There is no it. That's why it has no power. Yes, there's an it. There's a mental image in the mind when the senses report, oh, this rope is wet and thin and wiggly, and then that flash of an image of a snake. But that's not an it with substance or power. And any error that's presenting itself to you, any evil, is the same nothingness without presence or power. There's nothing in it except a momentary image that you have been hypnotized into believing has substance. Now, if you are hypnotized, how do you become dehypnotized? Well, he tells us in The Art of Spiritual Healing. He says, you can't dehypnotize yourself. It's never going to happen. All you can do is remind yourself of the truth that you know because you've seen it work in the past. Or you've read it. Or you've come to believe it. All you can do is remind yourself, okay, God is all. God is individual being. Well, this error, then, is not of God. It has no substance, no law. It's just floating on nothing. He hangeth this on nothing. No, it's not God ordained. It wasn't made by God, and so it has no God power. Spirit's not in it. The presence is not in it. Well then, if it has no power, then I am not supposed to battle. I'm supposed to stop. Stand still. And he says, in that stillness, you stand a little to one side as a witness. You're just still, quiet, watching. You can say, Father, reveal your presence. You can say, thy grace is my sufficiency. You can say, I stand still and wait upon the presence. But whatever you do, take up no physical hand against this, and no mental thought against it. Stand still and see God reveal itself. Or, as he says in The Art of Spiritual Healing, as you stand a little to one side, you behold consciousness forming itself. Consciousness cutting the stone out of the mountain without hands. All right. So we are to work with these principles like we just outlined, and then be still. 2 to 3 to 4 minutes, 12 times a day or more. Remember? Several times a day, he said in the last chapter. And then we just stand still. So let's say someone calls. Would you help me? I have a headache. Yes, I will help you. And now the presence is upon me. And so there's nothing to say but rest. And there's the release. Someone here listening to this must have just reached out, because I'm witnessing that stone cut out of the mountain without any hands. Okay, let's try that again. This is what I would do. Someone calls and says, I can't find any employment. And I say, yes, I would help you. I will help you. Let's go into meditation now. I hang up the phone. I walk over to my chair. I sit down. I close my eyes. And of course, it's staring right there. And so I say, look, air is impersonal. There's no person connected with this air. So I can drop that belief. It's impersonal. It's floating. It's a mental image just floating. It has no power. God didn't ordain it. God's not in it. So really, I have nothing to do with it. I don't have to work that hard. I can drop it. Now, why am I here? Oh, I'm here to experience the presence, to commune with the presence. Why? Because that presence is my sufficiency. So let me do that. Let me be still, that I may realize, feel that presence. Father, reveal thy presence. I'm still, I'm silent. Let my silence be the avenue for thy presence. I don't use hands, I don't use words, I don't use thoughts. That presence is my sufficiency. So now I rest in it. Father, thy presence flow. And so you see, one time I may use words only to quiet myself down to where I can stop using words and thoughts and be receptive. But another time, because I've done this quite a few times, I might hang up the phone and close my eyes before I can say or think anything. The presence is upon me, so there's nothing to do but be still and receive it. Now, when I open my eyes, and as I receive the call the next day or an email a day or two later saying that this problem has dissolved, this is how I come to see the nothingness of impersonal error. Through the practice of these principles, through watching the nothingness dissolve and the harmony reveal itself over and over again, it becomes a working consciousness. until it gets to the point where it did a minute ago, where it takes over without any words or thoughts. All I said was, "Yes, I will help you," and I hang up the phone, and there it was. Live, while making this talk. So you see, it gets to the place where it begins living you. But, I repeat, he is telling us one more time in this chapter, you will not have the complete demonstration. You will not know the truth that makes free unless you have all parts to that truth. Unless you can bear witness to the allness of God and also bear witness to the nothingness of impersonal error, you will not make the complete demonstration. But if you do have all of these principles, and you are able to bear witness to the allness of God, God's omnipresence, and bear witness to the nothingness of impersonal error, then you'll be able to stand there and witness God in action, and witness the complete demonstration as it happens through your consciousness, and you stand aside as a witness. But even that is going to take seeing over and over again until it becomes your working consciousness. You see this? You see that? You see it all? I give it to you as clear as I can. There are no shortcuts. In fact, he says here in this next little section, protective work, through an activity of consciousness, which we just described over and over again, we individually can escape we individually can escape 90 or more percent of all the evils that beset the world. We can live a life almost completely free of lack and limitation. But this freedom can be demonstrated only through the understanding and application of specific principles, which we have gone into. Now, we put online the other day, break the fetters that bind you. We put the part of the transcript on there. And so you can see, he says, you must consciously remove yourself. You must consciously remove yourself from this world of two powers and come out and be separate. There is no power outside of you that will do this for you. God won't do this for you. Pray all you want unless you pick up these principles, these specific principles, and practice them. You will not demonstrate the truth that makes free. Or you may in a partial measure, but as he says in the Kailua Study Series, you won't even have half of the demonstrations to which you're entitled. So there's no power outside of you that will do this for you. And until through this act of consciousness, through working with these principles, you do it for yourself, life will go on eternally presenting problems of one kind or another to you. You must consciously free yourself from these human laws and place yourself under grace. This has to be done every day. So, he says, if you do not make this an activity of your consciousness, you do not bring it to pass in your experience, and you cannot demonstrate it. God as individual being, the impersonalization of evil in the realization that it has no person on whom or through him to operate, and the nothingization of all evil, having no God ordination, these specific principles constitute the truth that makes you free. But, I say, you must work with these principles. And so that's chapter 3. The truth that makes free. And I know that Not very many people, well, he says himself, this is very, very rare that you find a person that has the complete realization that God is all. Why? Because most people settle for the belief that God is all, while still having these problems cling to them. And so it's not a complete realization, no matter what they mouth with their mouths, no matter what they say, no matter how they present it, it's not a complete demonstration, unless they have these other parts. Then, when you know, really know, from working with these specific principles, and from seeing error dissolve in the face of these principles, seeing evil disappear, seeing disharmony vanish. When you see this work over and over again, you come to the conscious awareness, hey, error has no power. Then, he says, that gives you the complete realization, because then you can see at a depth you've never seen before why God really is all. There's nothing and no opposition. And so I can rest in it. And when you rest in it, it begins living you. And then you are one of the very rare souls that Joel says he can hardly name three since Christ Jesus, that have had the complete realization. So why don't you be number four? Why not? All you have to do is pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools, spiritual principles, and begin living them, begin working with them. Well, let's see what we have next week or the week after, depending on my schedule. We have Christ raised from the tomb. Perhaps this will be. Yes. Oh, clap your hands, all ye people. Shout unto God with the voice of triumph. So perhaps we'll have a pretty uplifting spiritual message next week, and we can stop talking about the nature of error for a little while. All right. This is what I'm working with, and I'm working hard every day. And sometimes I have an instantaneous healing. Sometimes I have to work because I'm caught up in the hypnotism. And sometimes it's done for me in the twinkling of an eye. But I know the principles work. And I, like Joel, he said he worked for many years of heartache, until he proved and had the complete demonstration that impersonal error has no power. And so I am doing the same. And I don't care if I don't have the complete demonstration this life, I'll have it the next. But I will have it, because I have set my soul on this path. And maybe it's right around the corner. But I am practicing these principles, and I hope you join me. And we can all be a part of that new humanity that comes back, bringing this depth of consciousness, so that we leave in the lump and earth becomes the kingdom of heaven for all souls because of our consciousness and the work we're doing today. Thank you. God bless you. And God bless this laptop, which got us through because the power failed three more times, maybe four, while we were talking. I send you off with a feeling of the presence. And in his silence, he performs.